All right. Ack.
Let's go 8.
All right. That, I think, is... Yep, that's our other rules quiz. So this is basically just a... it's very hard to come up with rules because one of the good things I like about disc golf is most of the rules are pretty much you can figure them out. You know what I mean? There's some nuances here and there.
Oh, boy.
You know, foot faults and all that kind of stuff, but...
There's no such thing as a foot fault.
I'm sorry. Violation. I wrote it down that way. Stand violation. You know what? You guys get to go second.
God damn it.
Question one, true false for Candy. A player may ask their opponent how many throws they have made on the current hole. A player who falsely reports that number loses the hole. Would you like me to repeat it?
No, I understand the question. You guys understand it. Is that true? They have to tell? I think it's up to the opposing player to know what the other player is shooting on the hole. I think he must report it when they're finished, but during the hole, it's up to the player to know what the opponent is doing.
Well, there's two parts to it. So.
Well, the question is really more, can they lose the hole for falsely reporting?
And can the other person ask? So I guess the first part is, can they ask? So sure, why not? You can ask. So the real question is, does the other person have to tell? And if they do tell, do they get penalized for getting it wrong or not speaking truthfully?
I think it's going to be false. What do you think? I don't think that's right.
Well, I mean, they kind of do have to know how many throws they've had.
They have to know, but they don't have to declare it during the hole. What I'm saying is they don't have to say it until the end. Do they have to tell the opponent how many shots? I don't know. That's what it comes down to. Do they have to tell them?
Yeah, does it sound like a fair rule? Is another way to think of it?
I think they do have to tell them, but I'm not sure if they lose the hole if they say it incorrectly.
Do you think they have to? So you say true? They have to tell them?
I think that's my gut instinct, but
all right, Pat, let's go true.
But I don't know if it's true that you can if they are incorrect with the number.
So do you think that makes it false?
I think that's the bigger question. Question, just so I know exactly what is true and what is
false. Question one, true or false. In match play, a player may ask their opponent how many throws they have made on the current hole. A player who falsely reports that number loses the hole.
Okay, so...
So they may, yes, they may ask. The player then, does he have to answer? And if he answers falsely, does he lose the hole? I don't think that is true. I think so... I would say false. He does not have to tell them what his score is on the current hole.
That kind of makes logical sense, too, because it's kind of your own responsibility to know how your opponent is doing.
Right. Usually the onus is on the player to pay attention to the other.
Yeah. Given that thought process of, like, you shouldn't have to...
Right. Like you're supposed to watch all the player for stance violations, not foot faults. You should know what's going on.
Losing the hole seems a bit...
That seems a bit harsh to me, too. And that does not ring a bell to me ever hearing that.
Yeah.
Are we talking like official match play rules for?
Yes, there are official match play rules in the PGGA rulebook.
I feel like the way this question is presented, the first part is a statement, not asking true or false. So it's a player may ask.
Yeah, the player can
That's
ask.
That's not the question. The That's question right. is if the player answers and they answer incorrectly.
That I don't think is true.
Do
I
they
think
lose that's the false. Hole?
That's right. They do not lose That's the hole.
All
right. I'm tempted to say that.
So that would mean we are stating it's false.
All right,
Pat.
Final answer?
Yes, that's final.
Actually, I literally, that is word for word what it says. In match play, a player may ask their opponent how many throws they have made on the current hole. A player who falsely reports that number loses the hole.
Oh, really? Wow. So we're right. totally wrong.
You got to listen to the woman.
I have never heard of that rule at all.
Have you ever heard of that?
I never heard of that either.
I would understand maybe if it was at like the end of the hole. Like you can't falsely report after the match play, however hole.
Thinking of the end of the hole, sure.
Well, like, it kind of makes sense because you got to know. Because,
yeah, what'd you get on the hole? Oh, I got four. No, you didn't. You know, like.
It makes sense too.
I was thinking more in the middle of the hole.
Right, that's what I was thinking too, and that I thought the onus was on my opponent to know where I'm shooting.
It would make sense if you falsely report it though, because you could potentially change how you're playing.
Absolutely.
You're running a putt or laying up a putt.
Oh yeah, right.
Here it is under AO4 scoring C. I just wanted to find it.
Yeah. Wow.
That's a new one. Yes, it is, because I do play match play sometimes.
In match play, a player may ask their opponent how many throws they have made on the current hole. A player who falsely reports that number loses.
Okay, yeah, I guess I was zoning in on the word have, meaning present tense. Where do you stand currently, not how many throws did you have, past tense.
That language also does not mandate reporting your score at all. It says a player may ask.
Falsely reporting,
And if you falsely report you lose all. You'd be like, I'm not telling.
Yeah, or I haven't counted.
It doesn't force them to say.
You don't know. You better ask somebody else.
So if they do say anything, they have to say the act.
Yeah, that's right. It seems to just be a penalty for falsely reporting. Yeah.
Right. If they say something, it has to be the correct answer. But if they don't say anything, they don't get penalized, right?
No obligation to say anything.
Well, it doesn't say that in language.
Yeah.
I'm sure it intends that, but it doesn't say that. That's a good catch, Jack.
Moral of the story, keep track of your opponent's score.
Mm.
Yeah.
And language is important.
Yes.
All right. Question two. This is for Ack. True or false again. A PDGA official who is playing may act as an official for players who are in their division.
That's a 50-50 ball.
Well, I don't want to admit it on tape, but I guess I'm going to. If that's true, I technically have abided by that.
Yeah.
Or violated that, not abided.
As have I. So let's go ahead and say it's true, and then that way we're guilty as charged.
Yeah, and then they can come get us.
Yeah.
That is false.
It's false. Good. God damn it.
Do we get a chance to guess?
At least we're... Yeah, you do.
So what's the statement? Can you read that again, Pat, so we can have the discussion all together?
A PDGA official who is playing may act as an official for players who are in their own division. Who are in their division.
They can, right? Just not on their card, right? They can't be like the official to make the ruling on their card.
To make a ruling on their card, right? Yeah,
they
sure.
They could rule on another card within their division. I think that's possible.
I'm going to say, why wouldn't they be able to rule on their card?
As being like the final say on an in-out, you got to be one of the three. You can't be the all-powerful, this is what it is on your card.
It would have to be like one of those weird, obscure
diagnosing situations. Like everyone has the ability to act as an official on their own card.
Everybody has to pass the official exam, but they're not officials unless the TD designates them as like officials.
You would have to be like registered as an assistant TD or have...
Designated an official.
Yeah.
Rule 801.02 Enforcement, F. An official who is playing may not act as an official for players who are in their division.
Okay. I thought it was just your card. Makes sense.
So wait, that was true, though.
So we were correct in our answer.
But
you guys said false, right?
But incorrect in our lives. That's good to know.
Read your statement again.
We said true.
You said true. Okay.
Okay. I don't think there's a couple things I want to run through real quick before we get back to the trivia. I don't think I gave a score after the one round, did I? It's 5-2. Ack is leading Candy 5-2. And currently, or maybe it's, was it 7-2 is what it's currently at. 7-2. Nobody scored yet in this round. Is that correct? Both of you guys guessed the opposite.
We were just discussing that. They said true. Can you read that last statement about the, what was it? That was the being the official, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, so we basically our intent was to say that if that was true, we'd both be guilty of it, having officiated, and so I think we
And you were throwing yourselves under the bus,
right?
Yeah, so that's kind of they got a point, right?
I guess that would make me too be right. If any tournament you play in, isn't it or no?
You have
were you asked to make an officiating decision.
No, what I'm saying is if you're running a tournament,
no big deal.
If you're playing it, unless you would have to name somebody else. Is that the case?
Well, let's say your assistant TD was an AMP2 golfer or an MPO golfer. You could officiate over everything except AM1, presuming you're AM1. And then the other person could officiate over the other ones. But it would only be if you had to make a decision.
Right. Yeah. So it's pretty much just to cover somebody else, to cover the TD's group. division.
Right. I've never been in a situation where somebody in my own division had a rules question when I was an official. So no, it's never happened to me.
It would have to be a discretionary decision too, because like the rules are the rules. So if it's a violation of the rules, well then that's the
problem. Right, right. There'd be have to be some contested something, some provisional thrown, and now a decision has to be made. Yeah.
So it's going to be an OB or not an OB, and you don't want somebody in your same division calling an OB.
Right. I've definitely violated that rule, though. I've had to make a few calls in my division, but good to know because I won't do that anymore.
I may have done that as well. But that's just also nonchalantly like, is this spot here on this whole OB? We thought this. I'm like, no, that is OB.
Right. Anytime there's something questionable, like so I've done this as well, but my answer is always throw a provisional and bring it to Adam.
Yeah, that's what we figured. You know, throw both and we'll figure it out.
All right. Question three, Team Candy. Another true and false. True or false? If I'm running late to a tournament, I can use my unaltered, generic-sized plain bagel as a mini marker. True or false? If I'm running late to a tournament, I can use my unaltered, generic-sized plain bagel as a mini marker.
I think so. It's just got to be round and that. It's whatever the size limits of a mini are, and I think a bagel fits in that size limit. I don't think they tell you what material it can or can't be. If you want to use a damn bagel, you could. I think it's small enough.
The key in that question is unaltered. So that would mean to say that, yeah, that's true. Matter. If you alter the bagel, then no, you cannot.
I think you could use a bagel as a mini if you wanted to.
At one point, junior discs were illegal. And then
yeah, like you can't use the micro discs, right? Like the
changed it. So
the can toppers, I think, are too small.
I don't know about micro. Oh, you mean the really small ones?
Those are the micros, right? And you can't use the macros either. You can only use that.
Bagel, true or false?
But bagel, you can use a bagel.
Use your bagel.
You all agree?
Get a t-shirt. Yeah.
So there's basically four parameters. Mini markers must have a circular shape. Mini markers can be made from a variety of materials. Their diameter ranges between 7 centimeters to 15 centimeters, but they should have a height not exceeding 3 centimeters. So it is
flat. They have to be flat.
No bagel.
So what if you have a crappy bagel and it's thin?
That's why I said
I have bagel things. That's what my bagels are. They're two.
Your bagels aren't 3 centimeters.
My bagels are 3 centimeters.
Just mark it with a flagel.
I play tested this question with JFAT, so we went through all the scenarios.
Wow, that's really close. Right? Three centimeters is like what? Is it an inch?
Just over an inch.
Just over an inch, right?
Yeah. Bagels are like a good 4 or 5 inches, I'd say.
Not 4 or 5, but they're good too.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I was thinking a heavily packed one, yeah.
Yeah, bagels are thick enough for you to be wrong about this.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay. You can see I care a lot about the score, right? When we got two.
This is back to Ack. Question 4. Kenji is on the hole in front of me. I find his disc left from the previous hole. I yell over to him and throw a roller a good 150 feet away. Did I break any rule? Ack?
Yeah, first of all, you got this question all wrong because I find Kenji's disc, like I'm burying that in the leaves.
Love you too, Jack.
Yeah.
Well, he's your nemesis.
Yes. My arch nemesis.
Yeah. I'm
sorry. I sold it short. I apologize.
Yeah. So, okay, go ahead. Repeat.
Sure.
Repeat this. Hey, you know what? Talk to Adam.
Adam.
Yes, Adam wouldn't do that to me.
So Kenji's on the hole in front of me, and I find his disc from the previous hole. I yell over to him, and I throw a roller to him. He's about 150 feet away. Did I break any rules?
So I'm going to say that you would break a rule because you're intending to throw the disc. So the only thing is if it's not your disc, that's what I'm not sure about. But if you throw a disc further than, I think, what is it? Oh, gosh. 5 meters in the air. I think it's 5 meters. If you throw a disc more than 5 meters in the air, that's considered a practice throw, and that would count.
So it depends on when you put it down.
Are you in between holes, or you're still playing an active lie?
I'm on hole 11 at Beacon, and he's up on 12, and I'm throwing it up about midway.
And you're still playing hole 11.
Yeah. Ooh. Maybe I just tapped out, but people are still playing. And
I'm going to call that a practice throw. Because it's going more than 5 meters and you would get one penalty.
It's not going more than 5 meters in the air, though.
Oh, because it's a roller, you said. Oh,
yeah. Geez. Yeah. So he's helping us out here.
Yeah. So
my
yeah.
rollers go a damn sight longer than 5 meters in the air.
Yeah.
Before they touch down. But
there's still the idea that is it a practice throw?
So the question is incomplete. I feel like the question is incomplete.
Okay. Well, wait a second.
You feel free to ask questions.
There's another piece to that rule that we're forgetting, which is that it's the attempt to change the lie. If I'm throwing my disc up in the air while I'm walking and I drop it, that doesn't count. Or I catch it, that doesn't count. It's the intent to change the lie. So I'm going to say, since you're returning the disc, you're not actually playing your lie. You're just throwing a disc back to someone. I'm going to say it's not then a rule violation because there's no intent to change the lie.
Final
answer. If you're cool with that, Jack.
I'm deferring.
That's the way I would play that if that really happened in a tournament.
So is that true or false?
Oh, sorry. What was the question?
Did I break any rules?
Oh, then you did not break any rules. No.
A practice throw is any throw that is not made as a competitive attempt to change the lie.
Wait, so that is considered a practice throw, right?
Well, see, that's the thing. According to this rule, it wouldn't be. Because it's
read that rule again. I am almost positive that's considered a practice throw.
So they did pretty recently change the rules about practice throw.
I know they made it to that whatever 5 meter or whatever it is.
December 31st, 2018. This is an update.
Right. Yeah. Didn't someone get in a tournament? They like threw a disc like that and they got stroked for it, and that's why they changed the rule. I thought.
Yeah, you used to be able to return discs up to a certain whatever. Still, can you read the rule, Pat?
Practice throw is any throw that is not made as a competitive attempt to change the lie, except for a throw that is made to set aside an unused disc or to return a disc to a player and that travels less than 5 meters in the air. A player sees one penalty throw for making a practice throw. The throw itself is disregarded.
So as long as you're returning a disc to somebody, you can throw it as far as you want.
Well, no, it still can't travel more than 5 meters in the air. That is like the one scenario. If you throw it like a short, I do a forehand roller, so it would be on the ground for something like that.
Can you read that one more time? Read the middle part. That's what I was getting hung up on.
A practice throw is any throw that is not made as a competitive attempt to change the lie, except for a throw that is made either to set aside an unused disc or to return a disc to a player and travels less than 5 meters in the air. I think that the wording on that, let me double check it because it's...
So it has to travel less than 5 meters in the air, or it is...
Yes.
Right.
Any throw that travels more than 5 meters in the air is a throw. Practice or not, you're getting a penalty.
Right.
If it wasn't, you know, your regular throw.
Right. So that's what I mean. You returning your disc to me is a practice throw.
Okay. Right. So it's not about the competitive attempt to change the lie.
It's
practice throw is anything that isn't that.
Right.
Right. So if it's forehand roller and you put it right down, then it's not a practice throw. If it's my roller, it's going to go.
I don't like that it says in the air. It should just be thrown.
Right.
But yes, I would agree with the letter of the rule. If you put a roller down less than 5 meters in front of you.
This is 809.03 practice throw. A practice throw is any throw that is not made as a competitive attempt to change the lie.
Okay, so that box is checked, right? And then the next part is?
Except for a throw that is made either to set aside an unused disc or to return a disc to a player. It's so weird. And that travels less than 5 meters in the air. It's like really bad English.
That's what makes it weird. So
a drop is not a practice throw, and then a player receives one penalty throw for me.
So it does return, except for when it returns to a player. So that makes it not a practice throw, but once it crosses the 5 meters, it then does become a practice throw.
Yes.
Right.
I think it's to both the setting aside the unused disc and the returning the disc to a player.
There used to be talk about people getting stroked for tossing their disc back to their bag that's 10 feet away or whatever.
Right.
You can do that.
Or you toss it like 2 feet away, but then it hits your bag and rolls down the hill and hits somebody. You know what I mean?
That's probably why it says travels less than
right.
Oh, okay. I can see that aspect is where it's thrown 5 meters.
I mean, that happens. You throw your disc at your bag and it stands up and rolls.
Yeah. And then someone to call you on that would be kind of bullshit.
Yeah.
Next time, Kenji, you're just not getting your disc back.
Burying it like Jack, right?
Bury it.
We're back to Candy for question five. A player inadvertently throws his second throw from another player's lie, and it ends up near the basket. He then makes the putt. His group calls and confirms the misplay. What is his final score on the hole? I'm going to repeat that. A player inadvertently throws his second throw from another player's lie, and it ends up near the basket. He then makes the putt. His group calls and confirms the misplay. What is his final score on the hole?
He gets a 5 for a misplay. Because he putted out, he can't go back. If he noticed before he putted that he goes back and it's only a 1-stroke penalty, right?
I'm pretty sure, yeah.
I think that's the way it goes. But because he putted out, he continued. And so it's a 2-stroke for a misplay. So we get a 5.
You guys agree?
I agree with that. Yeah.
You are correct.
And I'm right. If he threw the second shot and said, oh, this isn't my disc, then you just get like a 1-stroke penalty for like a practice throw. You just take that disc back. You get a 1-stroke penalty and you continue on with your play.
Yeah. It's only if you do two, if you do another throw.
Then it's a 2-stroke penalty.
Yeah.
Which in real scenarios may actually be beneficial, right?
Yeah, absolutely. That's exactly what I was thinking. Because let's say
in par 5s, it could be useful.
Right. Let's say I don't get off the tee at all. I hit like first available, and you know Josh has driven the thing 350 feet. Why would
this is my lie up here?
Right.
That's a disqualification for being that far off.
That's a deliberate misplay, and that's you can get DQ'd for that.
Right. Exactly.
You do get props, though, for being able to run up to your opponent's disc, throw from his lie, and then go up to your next throw and put in without anybody saying anything.
Yeah,
right. Outlandish scenarios are always fun to talk about.
All right. Question 6 for Ack. True or false? When putting, as long as the disc comes to rest at the bottom of the basket, a player may land with their foot past their mini.
That's going to be
absolutely false.
False.
You're correct.
Yeah. Doesn't matter what happens to the disc.
Yeah, after having released the putt, the player must demonstrate full control of balance behind the marker disc before advancing towards the target. A player who fails to do so has committed a stance violation and receives 1 penalty.
This is language that I have always disagreed with, the demonstrate balance. The fact is, you can fall on your ass behind your mini, no balance demonstrated whatsoever, and still have a good putt.
Yep.
You do not need to demonstrate balance.
Well, you do, but
after you've fallen on your ass, you stand up and you're standing there. You're demonstrating balance before you take that step past your mini.
Yeah, right.
It just has to happen at least once before you go past your mini. So you could fall on your ass, roll down the hill backwards. It doesn't matter.
Question 7. Back to Candy. Multiple choice. Where was the first permanent pole hole in-ground baskets attached to a pole golf course in the world? A. Oak Island, Nova Scotia. B. Oak Grove, California. C. Oak Ridge, Tennessee. Or D. Oak Forest, Texas.
That's California, right? Oak Grove, California?
California, Oak Grove.
Final answer?
Final answer.
You sure it wasn't on Oak Island?
Yeah.
All right. You are correct. Question 8. This is for Ack. In what year was the PDGA formed?
Wow.
That's it. This is not a multiple choice.
Year right, one.
Straight up.
Yes, you have every year between now and then.
Many multiples of choices.
Well, let's see. Steady Ed, number one.
Mm-hmm. That's and if you guys don't get it right, we'll let the other team guess and whoever's closest after that.
Oh, God.
So other team think is what I'm saying.
So
got to be in the 70s.
I do know. Not necessarily.
Yeah, okay.
So there were several world championships that were not PDGA before the PDGA was established. So the course in the previously referenced question went in, I believe, in 76. And Ed, I think, established the PDGA, well, DGA, when he walked away from WAMO. But all this chatter still doesn't leave me with a guess.
I like going with the same year as the course there because I mean, Steady Ed founded the PDGA, right? And I don't know. I would think that getting that full course in and running a tournament there, right?
I'm not against it. I don't have. I wouldn't be surprised if it was 1980, but I wouldn't be surprised if it was 76.
I don't know. That's just. I'm just kind of guessing.
I'm back in your play.
So what are we going with?
All right, well, let's go with 76 then, the same year as the Oak Grove course.
1976 is correct.
Wow.
Nice.
All right. The PDGA was formed in 1976?
Yep.
Wow.
Wow. I thought DGA came first before PDGA for a while. I was along the lines of what Jack was thinking.
Yeah. Like I said, so like there was right, no,
there was DGA, Disc Golf Association, before the PDGA.
Maybe not by much. I don't know. What I do know is that the PDGA was not the body, you know, that was running world championships, you know, in the late.
Right. Because they're multi-sport, right? Wasn't that's that right. The World Disc right. Flying Association, whatever it is, the W.
That's right.
Right. Was not, you know, that was everything.
Freestyle, yeah. Ultimate.
Freestyle, MTA, and
Guts,
run, catch, throw. Right? Disc golf was just one of the disciplines.
Yeah, right.
According to my Google and Wikipedia, Disc Golf Association is a company founded in 1976, so same year. As PDGA.
Well, so what is it? Disc Golf Association was?
Yeah, Disc Golf Association, DGA. Is a company founded in 1976 by Ed Hedrick and located in Wattsville, California.
Right. So that, I agree. That's what I thought. But the
PDGA. I would have been the same year.
But that's why I don't think the PDGA was in 76.
Well, no. In the summer of 76, he sent out a letter, roughly 100 of the top players in the country, inviting them to join the PDGA. That's according to the PDGA website.
Oh, wow.
Well, of course, they're going to take any early year as possible.
Right, right.
You know, DGA was a private, for-profit enterprise.
Yeah.
Right. And PDGA was not founded.
No, they're founded as like a governing body.
Right, exactly.
So it makes sense that maybe they were in the same year. All right. So you guys got that. You guys, it's a 9-4.
Lighten it up, guys. We're doing good.
All right. Candy, which course came first, FDR or Cranberry?
Ooh. You guys are the downstaters. I'm way up here in Colony. I think it's Cranberry, though, right?
Yeah, I don't know. They've both been around a little bit. Cranberry was certainly the first course in that area, I think.
Cranberry or FDR? I don't.
Cranberry's been around.
When did Newman start it? Was it Newman that started FDR? Wasn't it?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, but it's been around since before I even started playing disc golf.
Yeah, me too. I thought it was like 98, 97, 99, around there. I thought Cranberry was around the same time, but I thought Cranberry was older.
Okay. Yeah, you. I have no idea.
I'm guessing, but yeah. I think Cranberry's older. Pat,
you go with that?
Yeah.
You are correct.
Yay.
By how much?
So this is what's weird.
By a single year. I actually looked this up because we were...
Right there, I thought they were close, right?
Well, according to PDGA, it's 1991. According to Disc Golf Scene, it's 1998.
Is that right?
Because I believe
when we had our PDGA conversation a few weeks ago, Pat,
mm-hmm.
I was... stammering like I am now because I felt like I should have known. Mm-hmm. But that's what I saw. I saw 98 also. And but 91, either one you're also seeing? Yeah,
well,
either,
PDGA
either way.
Had it. Yeah, PDGA had it listed. But again, I think according to what you were thinking, and I would go with the 98 number. It seems more accurate.
I just don't know.
And FDR is 2000.
And that's why you didn't get that question, Jack.
FDR is 99.
I thought FDR was 99.
Bill we got to change 2000 that on, so that he could sell some t-shirts.
We got to change that on Disc Golf Course Review and the PDGA because it's wrong.
All right. Final question. This is question 10. This is for Ack. Which course came first, Camp Gaw or Giroliman? Which course came first, Camp Gaw or Giroliman?
Do you have any clue, Jack?
Gut reaction is Jay Park.
That was my gut reaction too, but I actually I've never played there. I got to get up there. Yeah, let's go Jay Park.
All right.
Final answer?
Yep.
Yep.
Jay Park opened in 2006. Does that sound right, Kenji?
That is correct.
Camp Gaw, 2005.
Oh, wow.
That's tight.
Yeah.
Oof. All right. So after two rounds of trivia, we got 9-5. Act 9, Candy 5.
What a way to make a living.
All right. Candy, what do you got?
Candy, what do we want? You guys pick. I picked last time.
Three.
Hole three. So, Jack, you said last time you got a rat.
True.
Right?
Yep, absolutely.
I got two rats. I didn't even expect it. They sent me two rats and two calendars.
Oh, that's nice.
And they're both, first of all, I have to say, I'm going to say it's more the Innova harp than it is the Innova
It's
like a beadless harp.
Right.
And if anybody wants a doo-doo brown beadless harp and a gold brown doo-doo.
Oh, yeah. Color, if anybody thinks they can hang on to these.
Yeah, so I got two. I already got a calendar from signing up for Discap. So I got two calendars and two doo-doo brownish looking rats.
What did you get, Adam?
Yeah, CTPs.
Yeah.
What did I get from where?
Innova. Did you get a Christmas disc?
Oh, I'm not. I guess I'm not on the list.
You're not on the list.
Well, no. Yeah, I ordered some discs earlier this year, and that's but I don't know why I got two.
Either that or Jeff got them.
Yeah.
I did buy myself way too many discs for Christmas, though.
Good for you.
You saw Jeff got a fancy disc Wachowski.
That's what I said.
I forget what he got, but it was not a rat, and he's the Mr. Ambassador.
So yeah, yeah.
He got the Firestorm, yeah.
Is that what that is?
Yeah. I never stole a Firestorm.
Save the good shit for those guys.
Yeah. I bet he would have known 1976, too. All right, hole six. Hole six, we'll just go ahead and do as our final question, CTP. The score is 9-5. Same rules as before. You can wager as many points as you got, and whoever's closest to the answer will be correct. Now, there's a twist, though. Since there's two people on a team, two teams, Andy and Josh being one, you each, as individuals, will give a answer and a guess and a wager.
So we have potential to gain zero or as much as we get combined?
Well, what'll happen is one's right and one's wrong, I'll take the right one. If both are right, I'll take the one that's most advantageous to you. But if you're both wrong, I will take the one that is most disadvantageous to you, if that makes any sense.
We got to go for broke.
Yeah.
It's not a real question about it.
So if you get it right, you get as much.
We got to get it right.
So final question, and the same thing, just send me like a message over to Facey Spaces. So I should be getting four answers. I want you to convert 10 meters to feet and inches. Closest to.
Oh, that is.
Without using the internet.
No cheating.
Sorry, 10 we're honorable people here.
Convert 10 meters.
10 meters to feet and inches.
And Andy and I are sending you separate answers?
No. You guys are sending one combined answer.
I got you.
But Adam, you never been up to J Park? You got to come up.
No, man. I know. Every time I've been trying to get up there, it hasn't worked out. Yeah, it's terrible. I haven't played Cranberry either.
Wow. We have 38 holes at J Park.
Yeah, I got to come up there. It's overdue for sure.
Hoping to do 144 tournament. Hopefully COVID has calmed down by June.
Yeah, I'm in. I got to get trained up for Ledgestone. So.
Yeah, Adam, you got to turn those.
Just that. I submitted my answer before.
Kenji, I want to say. No, I know, but you might want to rethink. The closest two is going to get it.
Well, so more you might want to get a little more specific. I gave you feet and inches.
Yeah. No, you got to get – it could be decimals. I'm saying whoever's closest.
Are we talking
cause it's
increments of inches? I'm going to keep it flat. I'm flat. If it's a half an inch and I lose by half an inch, so fucking me. Okay. Sorry.
All right. I'm in yellow. Here we go.
Yellow is not one of the possible answers.
So, I believe we have all answers. Final question of the night. I ask you guys to convert 10 meters to feet and inches. The answer is 32 feet, 9.7 inches. That's, as specific. So, Kenji, yeah, I would have said 32 point.
I thought it was 8.7. I rounded up to 9. If I'm being honest, I thought it was like 8.4.
Okay.
And now that I looked at it, oh, it's like, why did 8 stick in my head? Because it's like 0.8.
But you were right on it. So you had 32.9.
Damn.
So you get 5 points for your team. And
so it's nine inches and what?
Because it looks
5/8.
It looks like you guys win 10-9. They both bet 0, so I couldn't give him no point. You know what I mean?
Good job, guys.
So you guys win 10-9.
From the
congratulations.
We have the winners.
Well done.
Bravo.
Well done.
All right.
Way to go.
I'd like to thank Naomi for making Jack in a rush.
Well, before we go, is anybody...
Happy New Year, everyone.
Talk about anything?
The only person I see in was Pat.
Yep, stay safe, make putts.
Hopefully we get together sooner than later.
Awesome.
COVID is getting better, hopefully soon.
Andy and Josh, you guys got to agree to do like an interview at some point.
All right.
You know, and Josh Pallor.
Cool. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Just off Josh. Yes, we'll talk about
the triangle. Sweet up Hudson Valley. And remember, be nice, don't say nice. Thank you guys very much.
I think I'm going to do the Stafford Open this year.
You should.
Yeah, I mean, why not?
Where's that at?
I owe him.
Stafford Woods.
I owe him trips.
They have a good crew down there, too.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, they have one of the most legit wooded par fives I've ever played. It's like that and Nichols.
Nichols is great.
Yeah, that Nichols par five is kind of like the par five at Stafford. It's just like long and tight. I took an 8.
We're looking at possibly taking a hole 4 white to a par 5.
Up the hill?
Yeah.
I like that. Push the basket to the top.
That's right. Push it to the top and then south, you know, sort of down the Taconic a little bit.
I think that would be a nice counterbalance to the back par 5 that's really a 4.5.
Yeah, I think that's just going to end. So there's a question as to like which of those hole 12s belongs in which layout. Mm. So it's a legit par 5 for, you know, 900 players. So it could go into the yellow layout. The option is what we're kicking around is, you know, maybe it's a 4, you know, for the 950 player, but it's a really that's a really hard bird.
What about if we took the basket and moved it back 50 feet?
Yeah, that's possible. You can get a legit par 5 going that way.
The other thing is those two trees. Sorry, one last thing. Those two trees that are there in a couple of years are going to make that a much more difficult par 5.
Yeah, that's right.
You could implement something like that signage I threw at you a while back and have it say red level 5. White level 5.
Right, right, right.
Blue level 4, gold level 4, that kind of thing.
Yep. It's just that hole 12 is really one of the conundrums for figuring out like who's for what.
Yeah.
Because the yellow presents its own problems too. Like that is a very difficult bird.
I guess so. I think the top players can bird it pretty easily because
absolutely. So the question is what layout does it belong in?
Right. Yeah, I see what you're saying, because it is probably for like an AM2 player harder to birdie yellow than it is to birdie white, because you could just...
In over a decade, I have one bird on that hole, and it was a fluke.
Yeah, I think white, I mean, you know, white, you can throw 4 fairway drivers or 3 fairway drivers at a putt, and, you know, it's there.
Yeah, well, Brinster has a bird on it having gone out of bounds, having thrown past it.
Right, right. That's the throw past it.
No one's designing for Brinster. It's not a gold.
It's still hard.
Layout.
Get it's a every blue. Time. But I very rarely six it.
But it's super fun. And, you know, everybody wants to play it. Like it's a grind playing the yellow.
Right. And it's also that you get up to that tee and you're like, all right, you know, I kind of threw 2 long shots if you're playing white, and now I got to throw my longest shot.
Yeah, right.
Be a pioneer. Put in the signs. All your problems go away.
It's going to be a hard sell.
Copernicus had a hard sell, too.
Before we start anything really, really, Kenji, what were you just watching? Because when that guy said, whatever that was, people are going to listen to it or watch it. It's on YouTube. What is it?
It's the 2020 Wahi Tapu Final 9, and it's Flexline Media. You know why? It's probably because I watched that other Australian, well, the guy from US who's now in Australia, Iceberg TV. Do you watch that YouTube channel?
No, I hadn't. But so this tournament, the announcer guy's like Australian, and it's just funny to to listen.
Yeah, I didn't. I just started this without any sound. I was just watching it, and I was like, "Oh, maybe they're in Hawaii, Wahi Tapu," and then I put the sound on. And,
nice.
But the baskets look a little weird. They got like they're spiral on the bottom, and they come to like a point.
Hmm. Oh, I think I've seen that.
Yeah, and they're rounded at the bottom instead of square.
Yeah, it's almost like a little bucket or yeah.
Like yeah. It's just an odd shaped basket. I mean, it's relatively same size. Just never seen those baskets before. So, has anybody played Blatnik Park? That's a big crickets. Okay, so imagine hole 16 is a long uphill kind of fairway. It's got woods on the right. And there's a road that runs down the entrance road runs down the whole left side. Everything on the left side on the pavement and over is out of bounds. So your drive's got to go uphill a little bit and land in this narrow kind of fairway on a slope. Off the tee, it's kind of a little bit hard to see up a little bit. So there's the hole before just ended, and Jeff Wachowski, TD extraordinaire in his cart, is up on the road watching the shots come to a spot for us. And we throw a drive. I throw it, comes close to him, and it turns over and lands up. Oh, okay. And I can't remember who it was, but one of our players threw a disc, and it was going right towards Jeff in his cart. And he went to reach for his cart and missed the handle. And don't you know that disc squarely hit his cart handle and bounced back in bounds when it was clearly going out of bounds.
Yep.
And there was no penalty to Jeff except for I gave him shit because I was like, what are you doing? He's supposed to be going out of bounds. He's got a TD.
Damn.
Kind of funny story. So yeah, if we had asked Jeff to move and he didn't, you call him on a courtesy foul, but we didn't tell him to move. You know, he was spotting for us. But literally, just because he took like a step away from his cart when he reached for it, he missed it. And it went ting right on the pole and bounced back in bounds.
That's crazy. Just do the weirdest thing.
Yeah. All right. Enough of my story. What's the next number?
So it's only intentional or not intentional. So if you intentionally hit it with your bag, then it's two strokes.
If he intentionally did it, yes. He was intentionally, he was trying to move his car. He just missed.
Right. Okay. So then it's no penalty.